live here on the Pulse at 1-866-823-1077. Continuing our conversation with attorney Christoph Corshane from the Conservation Law Foundation. And you can go to my Northern Pass page at briantilton.com and you can read some of the things that I've linked to in recent weeks and months and actually years now. Or you can go to clf.org and go check it out yourself to see all the things that they've written. In talking more about the Northern Pass proposal and so many of these claims about, and you can go read the links to the reports and really the gory details about the claims of how this is clean energy and so on. And then also, and Christoph, when we were talking about the mailer that went out that says, "We've listened," emailer Taris, who lives on the right-of-way in Concord, says, initial header edit for "We've listened." He says, so it would be, "We've listened, and now we're done listening." Nice. Nice, Taris. But, you know, one of the things that you did when there was this big meeting in Easton last week with the sponsored by the Easton Conservation Commission, among many, many other groups, you were there representing Conservation Law Foundation. You came out with a comparison of alternatives to Northern Pass where you really looked at the cost of burial and what's being done throughout New England.
No, I think one of the things that's happened since Northern Pass was originally announced, and there was this feeling that was expressed that, oh, it's just economically impossible to bury a long-distance, high-voltage power line. And since then, you know, we've seen the Champlain-Hudson Project, which I'm sure you've discussed with your listeners, mm-hmm. as well as the Northeast Energy Link Project, both of which are serious commercial proposals. And Northeast Energy Link is a national grid project in association with a company called Emera. It's a private utility that works in both Maine and in Canada. And the Champlain-Hudson Project is, you know, basically financed by the Blackstone Group, one of the largest private equity companies in the country. And that project is much farther along in the permitting process than Northern Pass. In fact, it's got its state approvals already.
Okay.
It's gone through its whole state approval process. What they've done in both those cases is they've released initial cost estimates. And in the case of Champlain-Hudson, they've actually broken it down in somewhat fine detail in terms of what, you know, undergrounding will cost, what parts of it, this project, the Champlain-Hudson Project, will go underwater versus what will go underground. That's a purely underwater or underground project, the entire length of it, 330 miles. So that project is estimated to be about a $2.2 billion project. And if you look at the published things that have come out and you just run the numbers based on the public filings of that project, you can see that the actual cost of burying that line, of which it's proposed to bury the line, in 130 miles of active railroad rights-of-way and roads in New York and through large portions of upstate New York as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not solely, a situation where it's completely not comparable to what conditions are in New Hampshire.
In other words, there's ledge in the ground.
There's ledge, there are rocks, there are impediments.
Mm-hmm.
And so they've incorporated some contingencies into their estimates. And we're looking at, you know, somewhere between $5 and $6 million a mile if you look at both the Northeast Energy Link and the Champlain-Hudson Project. If you look at those, both of those are about what we're looking at for burial in softened transportation corridors, which is, of course, what the state is most interested in.
Mm-hmm.
It's what a lot of people feel would be a really elegant solution. It's like anything, it needs to be fully analyzed and vetted if it were to be proposed in New Hampshire. But certainly Maine has a transportation corridor bill statute that's on the books.
And they did that after taking a year off for development projects, too, didn't they?
Well, I think they passed this statute and they went through a public process to solicit bids. And Northeast Energy Link, you know, did submit a notice of intent to participate in that process to bury their bury their power line in I-95, and that would actually be subject to permitting in New Hampshire because it's going to go down I-95 through the seacoast. So there's an active project, you know, in New Hampshire that's on the drawing board that, you know, the publicly available estimates which they've provided suggest a cost in the $5 to $6 million range per mile. You compare it to Northern Pass, and I haven't updated the numbers since they came out with their $1.4 billion cost estimate increase, but we're looking at something that's a little bit less than $5 million a mile for overhead lines. If you exclude, you have to exclude these converter stations that are very large costs associated with these projects. They're, you know, $250 million projects, just the converter station. So if you just look at the line per mile basis, you get a really, you know, a much closer comparison, and nothing like the 5 to 10 time numbers that we keep hearing from Northern Pass, which in fact, again, you go into the background for what those numbers come from. They appear to come from a study which analyzed how much more costly it is to bury distribution lines, which obviously would be much more expensive to weave distribution lines in underground areas in lots of places. And in fact, distribution lines is an entirely different technology than the high voltage direct current line that these other big projects are. So there's a lot of I guess the punchline is, you know, we shouldn't be believing Northern Pass on the climate benefits claim based on, you know, simple scrutiny of the number. And it seems from a very simplistic but, you know, presumably reliable understanding of these other projects that are being proposed that burial and transportation corridors is a legitimate, viable economic alternative. That's what the SB 361 Commission ultimately found.
Yep.
That, in fact, it's site-specific, but in fact, you know, transportation corridors is a real strong option that needs to be looked at. And then we hear just from Northern Pass, just an utter dismissal.
It costs 10 times as much to bury the power lines.
And an important thing for your listeners to understand is that this isn't, you know, a direct – the budget for this project is set by its proponents.
Mm-hmm.
So if it would cost, in fact, $2 billion to build this project underground in transportation corridors, then it stands to reason that if New Hampshire believes that that's the option that's in its best interest, we demand that option. And if Hydro-Québec, which is financing this project, does not want to pay for that, it's not in their interest, then it's not in their interest, and they can abandon the project. It is very important for us to understand this is not a situation where, you know, the public is directly on the hook for the project costs. The Hydro-Québec is fronting the money for this thing. And we, as the state of New Hampshire, if it's a viable option to put these lines underground or to pursue some other type of alternative, in the paper that I put together, there's, you know, a discussion of how much energy we are planning to save with the energy efficiency book programs that are currently on the books, how much we could gain if we increase the capacity of the existing line to its technical capabilities.
Sure.
These are other options that are on the table. If we put these options on the table, and we figure out, you know, there are better ways to do this. And New Hampshire says, we want a better way than this. And Hydro-Québec says, we don't want to pay for it. Well,
then they can go home.
Then that's there's a really strong interest on the public side of demanding a good solution for the state. And if that's not good enough for Hydro-Québec and for Northeast Utilities, then the project doesn't go forward. It's as simple as that.
Sure, exactly.
We should demand what we, you know, deserve.
Attorney Christophe Courchain from the Conservation Law Foundation joining us here on Bulldog Live for just a couple of minutes. Want to talk about the presidential permit process now. Now that the clock has been restarted, there will now be an expiration date because the public scoping comments had been open for the last year and a half, 2 years. That Northern Pass has been, you know, on appearance inactive. We know they've been working on other things here that we're starting to see today. But the public scoping comments continue. They will have an expiration date. There will be public scoping meetings to be held. What about these alternatives of burying the line on transportation right-of-way? Is that something that the Department of Energy is required under the NEPA regulations to consider alternatives like that?
CLF certainly believes that's the case. What the Department of Energy is obligated to do is to look at all reasonable alternatives to achieve the project goals. And the project goals, you can put them in a lot of different ways. You know, certainly, you know, if you phrase the project goal as, you know, to build a power line on PSNH's corridor, then it's certainly a narrower range of alternatives that you have than if you say our goal is to potentially bring down, you know, an appropriate amount of Canadian hydropower to, you know, help meet our energy needs in the region. If you do that, then you can start to look at a broader array of these alternatives, which we believe is legally required under National Environmental Policy Act, which is the statute that governs this whole process.
Okay.
You have to do this as the federal government. And so one of the things we've advocated in the past, and we will advocate again, including with some of this more updated information, is that these are reasonable alternatives. I mean, we have commercial entities that are proposing them. One of them is even in the Department of Energy process of its own. The Champlain Hudson Project needs the same permit that Northern Pass does.
Okay.
So let's look at these issues together, figure out whether there are preferable alternatives. And that's what ultimately this environmental impact statement will conclude at the end of the day. It will look at all these reasonable alternatives in detail and compare them to the project's preferred route and configuration and say, what's the environmentally preferable alternative? And at the end of the day, after that determination, then the Department of Energy and the president have to make a determination. Is this project in the public interest? And so those are the two kind of upcoming decision points that we'll be looking at for the Department of Energy to make. The public has a huge opportunity to express their opinions still. There will be an end date announced. We believe there's going to be a two-stage process now. One stage will be that the Department of Energy will announce, look, we've received a new application. If you want to intervene in this proceeding, you can file new comments on the new application, and you'll have 30 days to do that. Following that process, there'll be a scoping process restart, which was what you were referring to. There will be meetings that will require some fairly large venues,
I have a feeling.
And we've been pushing for an extended, you know, there's a lot of new information in the amended application that was released. There's a lot of, you know, people who weren't involved at the, you know, now going on 3 years here of this project. People who weren't involved at the time who really are affected by either the new configuration in the North Country or you know, maybe they moved to Concord in the last 3 years. They should have an opportunity to participate in the same way that everyone else did back then with the benefit of all this new discussion, this new amended application. So we're arguing for kind of an extended period of time for people to register comments and help the Department of Energy identify the issues that need to be addressed in the environmental impact statement. This is supposed to be an open process. It's supposed to be something that is responsive to public feedback. We haven't necessarily seen that in certain decisions the Department of Energy has made so far.
Mm-hmm.
But we're hopeful that with the right amount of pressure, the right amount of advocacy on the part of our state and federal elected officials, that the Department of Energy will be more responsive and will actually undertake a serious analysis. That's what we're arguing for. That's what we believe is legally required. And so join us in that. You'll have lots of opportunities to participate in the public process. We will keep people informed. I know you will.
Yep.
You've got one of the best websites out there in terms of the record, the record of this project going back
But people can sign up for the email alerts through Conservation Law Foundation as well.
Yes, that's right. If you go to our website, clf.org, and then you put in a slash in northern-pass, you'll get some of our Northern Pass resources, and you'll be able to sign up for Northern Pass Wire, which comes out periodically and provides an update and provides links to some of these articles that we've been discussing today on Northern Pass.
They're chock full of detailed information. It's very well researched.
Thank you, Brian. No, we're very appreciative.
All right. Well, CLF.org, attorney Christoph Corshane, Conservation Law Foundation, thank you very much for coming in today.
Thanks, Brian. It was a pleasure.